Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Star Wars 7x7 episode 3189. We're continuing our mini-series of mid-season review episodes for The Mandalorian Season 3. Can't believe we're four episodes in already. And today we're going to talk about Bo-Katan because this season is turning out to be just as much about her as it is about Mando and Grogu. Punch it! Hey, Rebel Rouser. I'm Alan Voivod, and this is Star Wars 7x7, your daily dose of Star Wars joy. And thank you so much for joining me for it. So we're here to talk about Bo-Katan today as part of our mini-series of mid-season check-in episodes around Season 3 of The Mandalorian. This season really has been very much about Bo-Katan, and there have also been some significant reversals of fortune for her throughout the course of the season so far. But before we get into what's happened with Season 3, let's remind ourselves of where we left her at the end of Season 2. At the end of Season 2, we had the episode The Rescue, where they got onto Moff Gideon's light cruiser, and Bo-Katan, out of this whole exchange, just had one thing to say. She said, "Whatever happens, Moff Gideon is mine." Now, she didn't necessarily say why that was the case, and maybe that might have been a little bit helpful, but ultimately probably wouldn't have stopped what happened between Moff Gideon and the Mandalorian, and Mando winning the Darksaber. But oh boy, steam radiating off Bo-Katan at the end with Moff Gideon going, ha ha, right? That was just terrible. And honestly, I'm surprised Bo-Katan didn't just sucker punch Din. He was willing to give it anyway, but just the clock him in the side of the helmet, and that would have been the end of it, right? But no, of course, it couldn't be that way, because then we wouldn't have any drama for Season 3. And it's probably not aligned with either the Way or the Night Owls or Clan Kryze, whatever you want to call it. Anyway, so we meet her in Season 3, and a lot has changed. And according to Jon Favreau, it may be as much as a year from the events of the end of Season 2 to where we pick up things in the beginning of Mando Season 3, because he said in an interview, and he kind of couched it and he kind of backtracked on it a little bit. It was one of those live red carpet interviews, but he did seem to suggest that time passing in The Mandalorian is similar basically to where it's passing in our world. So it was October of 2019. When Mando Season 1 premiered. Now it's March of 2023 when Mando Season 3 premieres. So we're like 3 years and change potentially down the line, which means we're a year and change down the line from the end of Season 2. And things have gone from bad to worse for Bo-Katan, we find out, because not only did she not win the Darksaber, but when she returned to what is, for all intents and purposes, her Mandalorian covert, they just said, "All right, you didn't get the Darksaber? See you later, alligator." And they took her entire hijacked fleet with them and became mercenaries. Now, in yesterday's episode, when I talked about our sort of 30,000-foot view of the season so far, there was one thing that I didn't mention, and it's actually particularly relevant to the discussion today. Who is it that attacked Bo-Katan on Kalevala, right? So we know it was a bunch of Imperial ships, but we don't know if it was somebody associated with Moff Gideon, or if it was another Imperial warlord entirely, or if this was the Mandalorians that had formerly been allied with her, suddenly deciding that she was important enough that she just needed to be taken out entirely. but I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. So she is in a horrible place when we see her at the beginning of the season. And then Mando goes off to Mandalore and Grogu ends up having to fly the ship back for help. She's about to kill the Mandalorian, I'm pretty certain, when she's looking through the window and seeing the N1 come back. But when she sees it's Grogu, she's like, all right, tell me what's going on, because this makes it clear that maybe something's going on Mandalore that's actually worth her attention. So suddenly things go from a negative to a positive for her. And then things go to an even greater positive when she gets to the surface of Mandalore and finds out that it is no longer poison, for all intents and purposes, that the air is actually breathable. And she's able to go down into the deep subterranean caverns, not quite down to the mines of Mandalore, at least, you know, not underneath them, I guess. But when she has the fight with that crazy arachnid mech thing, you know, the other thing I thought about that too was that, well, that thing took the Darksaber from Mando, and so she fought that thing and got it back. So technically, doesn't she own that thing? But no, I guess she has to fight Mando directly for it somehow. So yeah, it's another opportunity that she had to recover the thing that just doesn't quite work out the way she wants it to. So a little bit of a negative turn there. But then we get a super positive turn for her after Mando is sucked underneath the living waters and she goes to rescue him, and she actually gets to see a mythosaur when she had been just being snarky about the myths around Mandalorian culture and talking very despondently about what Mandalore had been like, and not with any sort of positive emotion about what her family situation had been like, sharing all of that backstory stuff with Din Djarin. But then she has this event with the power and the potential to turn her entire life around by seeing the mythosaur, by realizing that, yeah, the things that her culture is based upon, these are real things that she can actually hold on to and can light the spark of hope inside of her. Then we get the negative turn with the Imperial ships attacking her and the Mandalorian and bombing her castle on Kalevala. So goes negative there. And then at least she has a place where she can go. So we start to get a little bit of positivity heading back to as yet the unnamed planet where the Mandalorian covert is with the Children of the Watch. And we find out that she can actually be redeemed in the eyes of this covert, and they will welcome her in based on the fact that she was in the living waters, and just for good luck and good measure, she hasn't taken her helmet off since. Then she gets to a new positive level by getting to lead the war party to retrieve Paz Vizsla's son Ragnar. That's a lot of stuff that's been happening for her in season 3 of The Mandalorian. What a reversal of fortune it's been overall for her. Starting the season with nothing, now being part of a Mandalorian covert and actually being seen as a leader in their eyes. And this is something that Dave Filoni just recently talked about in an interview with The Wrap. So I'm going to give you a bit of a quote from that interview. He says that the story is by definition The Mandalorian and speaks to that part of the Star Wars saga that we're now telling, specifically about Din Djarin and Grogu, but they've pulled into their orbit many other Mandalorian characters, namely Katee Sackhoff's Bo-Katan. You have the armor, and I think that it starts to raise a lot of questions about the way and what is the way. And when they speak vaguely about their home planet of Mandalore, which was basically lost and really destroyed in the war with the Empire, is there any chance of rectifying that, reclaiming that? So with Dave Filoni's insights to kind of enlighten us and potentially point a way for where things are going for the rest of the season, well, now we have the possibility that Bo-Katan could convince the Children of the Watch that maybe it's time to go back to Mandalore. The whole goal for her at the end of season 2, as she had said, it was to reclaim Mandalore. It didn't seem like it was going to be able to happen for her when we saw her at the beginning of season 3, but now it seems like she has a group of Mandalorians that she's allied with who could possibly help her do that. And there are dozens of people in this covert. From when we saw it at the beginning of the season, it looks like the numbers have increased. Maybe that's just a function of how many other Mandalorians were off earning their keep to bring, you know, wages back into the covert. Or maybe they've been recruiting more people and they've been finding more of the Children of the Watch, or more people out there who are willing to convert to be Children of the Watch somehow. And yes, I know there would be some sort of deal around that where they, you know, would have to be inducted somehow and they would have to make accommodations for the helmet thing, or maybe not. I don't know. We're going to find out a little bit more about that. But this is now a significant group. We have no idea how large Bo-Katan's previous group was, but yeah, I think we've got some significant juice for Bo as she thinks about going back to Mandalore. The only other question out there then is, does she challenge the Mandalorian for the Darksaber? And if anybody's going to beat him, it's probably her. I know Paz Vizsla took a really good shot at it in the Book of Boba Fett and almost had him. So yeah, if anybody knows how to beat him and get the Darksaber back, it is likely Bo-Katan. And she's wielded that thing before. She knows how it works, how to use it. And she also will find out very quickly that the Mandalorian doesn't know how to wield that thing in a way that, you know, doesn't make it like this enormously heavy, ridiculous implement. But first, I think we're going to solve Greef Karga's pirate problem on Navarro. So there's still a lot to do in these last four episodes of The Mandalorian. But I think that pretty much wraps up where Bo-Katan is as far as her journey goes in season four, what we might have to look forward to for her journey for the rest of the season. And that is going to do it for this episode of the podcast. It just remains for me to say thank you so much for joining me for it, as always. And may the Force be with you wherever in the world you may be.
7x7 is not endorsed or sponsored yet by Lucasfilm Limited, Disney, or 20th Century Fox, and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Star Wars, the Star Wars logo, all names and pictures of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited, or their respective trademark and copyright holders. May the Force be with them. All original content is copyright 2021 by Star Wars 7x7. We hope you love it.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.